Welcome to SDI Encounters, a podcast from Spiritual Directors International. I'm Matt Whitney. Thank you so much for listening. I offer a heartfelt welcome to new listeners and a welcome back to existing subscribers. If you like this show, please do click on the subscribe button. Here we offer a wide range of perspectives, stories, and conversations centered around community, spiritual companionship, and spiritual care. You'll find additional information, including videos, webinars, and digital publications at our website, sdiworld.org. Before we get into this week's episode, did you know that Spiritual Directors International organizes travel experiences? We call these SDI Journeys. SDI has been leading passionate travelers on spiritual journeys around the world for over 25 years. Not just vacations, but truly exceptional trips filled with inspiring and enriching experiences. We have upcoming journeys planned in Scotland, New Mexico, Bhutan and Nepal, and Australia. Explore our Journeys website to find out more. SDIJourneys.org. That's SDIJourneys.org. Karen Lee Ehrlichman provides psychotherapy, spiritual direction, and mentoring in San Francisco, integrating spiritual practices and body-centered resources to support healing. She's a senior consultant for ethics of care and resource development with the Dinner Party and a faculty member in the Jewish Spirituality Program at the Graduate Theological Seminary. Karen's writing appears regularly on her own blog and has been published in numerous journals, blogs, and anthologies, including Presence, our quarterly printed publication. She's a longtime member of SDI and has contributed much of her gifts to the shaping of this organization. This episode is part one of my Zoom conversation with Karen, with this week's focus on vocation, the process of discernment that we often do around work and life and identity. You know, in our culture, we put a lot of emphasis on our work. We ask our children questions like, what do you want to be when you grow up? We can sometimes make work glamorous, and we hear memes and quotes like, do what you love, which are rooted in this notion that our work defines us. So we also explore the notion of calling, the idea that each of us has a purpose in life and that this purpose is linked to the work we do, or that we are meant to do a certain type of work with our lives. And we spend a lot of time and energy trying to figure out what that calling is. One of the questions a budding spiritual director might receive before beginning formation training is whether they feel called to this sacred vocation. And the question that one comes to frequently in their own spiritual journey is to simply ask the question, who am I? Karen shares her personal story in discerning her training and work as a therapist, a mentor, and a spiritual director. Okay, so let's start. So Karen, thank you for joining me this morning. One of the joys of this podcast is bringing on people who have been involved with SDI for some time, and people who have really helped to shape this organization, and members who really, for me, are the face of SDI, the people that make this organization what it is. And you are one of those exemplary people in my mind, just people who are embodying what we do. So maybe you could share a little bit about, you know, talk about your work a little bit.
Great. Thank you so much. I'm so honored and excited to be in this conversation with you. And I'm blushing a little by your comments about being part of the fabric of this organization, because I feel like I have gotten so much from being part of this community. And so it's just wonderful to be able to share a little bit about my own story and just be part of the larger quilt of so many other people's stories. I live in San Francisco Bay Area. I've lived here for almost 30 years, and I now have a private practice in San Francisco where I see people for spiritual direction. I supervise spiritual directors, which is actually like my great love. It's mentoring and supervision. And then I also have a psychotherapy practice, which I've been doing for a long time. I started out and really like the anchor of my work life has been as a social worker. And I felt very much drawn to the core ethics and values of social work that have resonated for me so much as a spiritual companion about honoring the dignity and self-determination of every person and meeting people where they are without imposing my own agenda on someone. But really, like, I've companioned people as a social worker and then broadened that companioning journey with them by more explicitly incorporating the spiritual dimension into my work with people. So it really felt like a natural outgrowth of my work as social worker for about, let's see, over 10 years. More than 10 years before I discovered spiritual direction very serendipitously.
So talk about how you got into spiritual direction and how that might differ a little bit from the other tasks, the other work.
Great, I'd be happy to. So when I was a young child, from a very early age, school age, I felt really strongly called to be a rabbi. And I was one of those rare, weird children who loved religious school and kind of kept that as a little secret tucked away in my pocket because it wasn't really very cool to love religious school. It was kind of one of those things that kids really complained a lot about. But for me, I felt such a deep, close connection to God and to the history of my people, and have very strong, still embodied memories of those early formative experiences. And so another girl in my class and I scheduled a meeting with the rabbi at the synagogue to let him know that we decided I didn't have language to say, I feel called. I didn't know that language. And, but I said, we want to be rabbis when we grow up. So what do we have to do? And at that time, there were no women rabbis in the United States. And I think there was maybe one woman in Jewish history at that time who'd been ordained a rabbi in Europe. And I'm blanking on her name right now. But so he, in a very patronizing, condescending way, literally patted me on the head and said, oh, sweetie, girls can't be rabbis, but you could marry a rabbi. And I really did not understand that. I couldn't really understand how I could have such a clear sense inside myself of calling, and yet what I was met with was a very clearly locked door. And so fast forward later into my life, when I was in high school and thinking about college and looking at careers, and at that time, pre-internet, there was this giant book called like the Occupational Encyclopedia or something. And it was literally like a giant encyclopedia where you could look up like everything from architect to zookeeper. And so I just started thumbing through it. And I got to the section, my mom was a teacher, my dad's a psychologist, so I come from a long line of service. And I came upon the description of social work, and I thought, well, I don't know if those actual tasks or jobs functions or things I would want to do, but I really resonate with the values of what this work is, and the social justice piece and the really like the community building piece and the relationship, ethical relationship component. And so that's how I entered into social work. And then fast forward many years later, I moved to California and I discovered Jewish meditation. And when I was in a 2-year Jewish meditation training program, that rabbi call came back again, very much like I'm tapping myself on the shoulder right now, like a tap on the shoulder from that young part of myself. And I heard and felt that young part of myself say, it's okay. You can do this now. There's nothing standing in your way. And so I was like, yay, this is great. And so I started looking into rabbinic training programs. And then it turned out that none of the rabbinical schools or training programs at that time would accept applicants who were in interfaith relationships. And my spouse is not Jewish. And so I spent a lot of time really wrestling in my relationship with God, with a lot of anger and grief. And I don't know if I would look back on that and say it was a dark night of the soul as much as it was a transformational time with a lot of pain and a lot of really, like, in retrospect, an invitation to listen to what my spiritual director calls the call beneath the call. Ooh. And what is the work that I actually feel called to do and that I feel most passionately about? And so I had a conversation with a friend of mine who is a rabbi and, unbeknownst to me at the time, a spiritual director. And he asked me, well, what are the things that you envision yourself doing that you want to do that you can't do now, aside from the learning part? And I said, well, I want to accompany people on their spiritual journey, and I want to support people in having meaningful spirituality and life cycle rituals, and to feel a sense of community and welcoming and belonging and a relationship with the God of their understanding in whatever way that is defined for them. And he literally, like, took out a piece of paper and he wrote down the name of Sister Marianne Clifford, who was one of the directors of the spiritual direction training program at Mercy Center in Burlingame, which is about 15 minutes from my house. And he said, you should call her and talk to her. And there, at that time, there were just a handful of Jewish people who were pursuing spiritual direction training. And so in those moments, like, where you're desperate and somebody you love and trust gives you advice, and so you do it just because you're in that stripped bare kind of soul open place. And so I called her on the phone, I scheduled an appointment, and literally as I was driving my car up the driveway before I'd even entered the building, I had this very clear sense, oh, this is exactly where I'm supposed to be. Mm. And I went in and talked to her and said, I'm here because Eric told me I should talk to you. I don't know what spiritual direction is. Could you please, like, tell me about it? And so she did. And she said, the first thing you have to do is go find a spiritual director for yourself and work with that person for a year. And then if you decide and discern that you, that this is the right place for you and that you really feel called to this work, then you can apply to the program. So that's what I did. I started my training program 3 days after 9/11. So it was a very tender time to be in community. It was a huge cohort. There were, like, over 40 of us, and mostly Christian and Catholic, but there was at least one person who was Buddhist, one person who was Sufi. There were two Reform rabbis, myself, and it felt really nourishing and nurturing to be, I can remember that day, that Saturday, just several days after the 9/11 attacks, and being in that holy space together. And that was kind of the beginning of our learning relationship together. I didn't go looking for it. It came looking for me.
Mm-hmm. It's that what you call the call beneath the call.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to, and yes, I ask these questions because I want the whole story and the whole picture. And I hear that and I sense that call beneath the call that comes out through these moments for you that are a little bit raw and a little bit, you described as being sort of naked and vulnerable. And, you know, Reverend Seifu and I were just talking about this week, these moments on the spiritual journey that are intimate and infinite. Intimate in that we are experiencing something very, very close and meaningful and tender, and it can be a joy or it can be a sorrow. It can be just something that makes us feel very strongly, but is also something that feels very distant and at the same time, or that makes us feel, I don't want to say smaller, but more just that we're part of something bigger than us, you know, that we are being led, and that is also, it can be comforting or it can be terrifying. Mm-hmm. It can be affirming or it can be unknown. It can feel like we're being led into unknown waters or unmapped territories. And I hear that in you, how spiritual direction called you, but called you through these moments. It wasn't like, I'm going to go do spiritual direction. It's like, I feel angry and frustrated in my current situation. But through that, something else, something generative can occur.
Definitely. And it's interesting because, I mean, there's a ton I could say about many different facets of this, specifically related to the call beneath the call. Part of that, in a very practical way, is about titles and the privilege that comes with titles. And I use that word in many different meanings, like the humble privilege of it, but also the societal privilege and access. And I've definitely had some teachers, particularly younger folks, who have called me out on credential privilege and in ways that have been really generative and helpful for me to think about, you know, who knows what my life would look like had I actually gone that traditional rabbinic path. I don't know. That aspect of humility actually as a practice, right? Of being in that place of vulnerability, of being fully present to my discomfort and my grief, and to have to say, okay, God, what is it that you are actually asking of me here? I may die without having this title, and it's not about the title for me. It's really about, what am I committed to? You know, where is my passion? And for me, passion is about the place I feel most connected to the divine. Mm-hmm. And how am I living into that fully? And what's the societal crap that gets in the way of what I think that's supposed to look like? You know, and I say that as a person with like advanced degrees and a license and all of those credential privilege-y things. And I think it's an interesting creative tension that we hold and that I see SDI exploring now, which is, how do we have space for both, yes, the traditional path of like, this is spiritual direction, is discerning the movement of God in one's life. Yes, it is that. And it is also shamanism, and it's also spiritual companioning in multiple cultural traditions, and it's the mashpia, and it's looks like all these different things. And how do we all be in community together, rather than having some hierarchy that says this is more legit spiritual direction and this is less than? You know, how do we honor our elders and lift up the young ones? And for me, that's the practice of humility, not just the concept of it. And for me, that's like a place of deep learning. And, you know, hopefully I have another couple of decades left of my life, and who knows where I'm going to be going next. But I think that piece about staying present in the discomfort and knowing that there is something holy in that place, and to not move away from it. And that's kind of, it's interesting because I've been thinking about this a lot, because there is an aspect of spiritual companioning that is about nurturing and comforting and that pastoral care quality, which is important. And at the same time, there's another quality that is being a grounded presence in the midst of suffering without fixing. Like just that message of, I got you, I'm with you, I'm not going to do anything unless or until I get some cue from you. Otherwise, just know that I'm here, like that aspect of spiritual direction. So I'm just thinking about your question about the similarities and differences between psychotherapy and spiritual companioning. And I remember going to Mercy Center and hearing these stories from some of the other students about them having the same spiritual director for like 10, 15 years. And that person was just like a particular kind of friend or mentor that you're really not supposed to have in therapy. Like the goal of therapy is to graduate. You know, the goal of therapy is you get better and then you break up with that person. I mean, we don't even have good language for it, you know? And so even though I certainly have people that I've worked with in psychotherapy off and on over many years, but there's an assumption built into the model that is to heal the suffering and that the person then moves on, that you know, you finish somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think spiritual direction has more of a, I'm kind of in this with you for the long haul in whatever way that might reveal itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a pathology model. It's not a fixing model. It's really a journeying model.
Yeah, a journeying model and a generative model.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you said, there's no disorder. There's no stigma around mental health or anything. It's something different and yet still relational. I want to go back to your own journey. I'm thinking now of when you're looking through the career book, right? The A to Z, like this is what I want to do. And this is the schooling I need, or this is the rabbinic path that I need to go on. And this is the title and this is the credential. And you talked about, you know, as you achieve each of those things, I suppose, you know, it's tempting to just like get into what you call the credential privilege, just like look at all these acronyms after my name kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just add some more. But I hear from you that like that is leading you. It's the work underneath all of that that is calling you. And so it wasn't any one of those things that satisfied you sort of in terms of how you felt called. You know, I did this piece of schooling and then I got that degree, but that was not it. Or maybe that was just a small part of it. And then I do this other thing. And now Karen wears all these different hats. What are you?
I ask myself that every day.
So I asked Karen this question, what are you? And I believe what makes that question funny is that embedded in it is a critique of this very notion that you are this job, or you are that set of tasks, or I am this job title. And it's the perfect place to pause for part one. We'll do our response to this question, what are you, or who am I, for next week's podcast. So in the meantime, let me ask you this. Are you someone who wears a lot of hats? And by that I mean, do you have many different tasks to which you are called? Many spiritual directors are not just spiritual directors, as Karen witnesses to. They do many other tasks in their lives. I can name a few of these hats for myself. I'm a podcast host. I'm a visual artist. I'm a spiritual practitioner. I've been a teacher. I'm a husband, a father, a friend, a companion. You could probably rattle off a half dozen identities that you inhabit in a week. Which of these defines you the most? Or is there a term that would bring all of these together in a nice, tidy way for you? Here's another question. What if you hit a roadblock in this process of vocational discernment, as Karen did when she was told that because she was a woman or because her partner wasn't Jewish, she couldn't be a rabbi? Does that mean this particular calling was wrong? I think you know the answer. But how have you responded to your own roadblocks in life? Does your own life experience differ from how you respond to this question? It's more likely that we need to examine the very practice of categorizing ourselves, particularly when it comes to self-worth and self-value. Karen and I explore this in depth in part two of our conversation, which we will release next week. This is Matt Whitney with Spiritual Directors International. Thanks again for listening. Your time and your presence here are deeply appreciated. If you liked this show and would like us to continue making them, please do subscribe now while it's fresh on your mind. Also, we would love to hear from you, so please feel free to send in your comments and suggestions to the email address podcast@sdiworld.org. To learn more about spiritual companionship and ways that you can plug in and join our community, visit us at our website at www.sdiworld.org. Thank you. Blessings and peace on your day, and may you share blessings and peace to others.